Hey everyone, welcome to episode number 40 of the Woofing Possum podcast with me, Greg, your host for this episode. And today I'm super proud that we've got another amazing guest joining the podcast where we're going to be talking all about the world of gun dogs. Now, I'm hoping this will actually be the first in a few chats with this particular guest because there's just so many aspects to dive into. So this is a little bit more of an oversight type episode. However, I do just want to give one little warning before we dive into it. With it being gun dog related, and although that we are focusing on gun dog training and the dogs and the skills that can be obviously obtained by teaching your dog gun dog work, there will be references to the gun dog sporting world and some of the things that happen in that sporting world. And I appreciate that may be a little bit uncomfortable for some listeners. So if that is a topic that you would rather not hear about, then I would suggest you either proceed with caution or alternatively give this episode a miss. Hope that helps, folks. For those who are sticking around, enjoy the episode. I hope you enjoy it, and we will definitely be speaking to this fantastic guest again in the future. Carl, hello. Welcome to the Woofing Possum podcast.
Hiya.
How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Good.
Firstly, thank you so much, mate, for sparing your evening to come and talk to us about this week's topic. But before we dive in, would you mind, as always on these types of shows, just giving a bit of a intro to the listeners on kind of who you are, what you do, where you come from, you know, the full blind date repertoire, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I'm Carl Cheatham. I run Charmwood Dog School. I've done that now for probably about 5 years. I got into the whole dog thing probably about 15 years ago now. Got a black Labrador and just wanted a well-behaved dog and sort of got into a bit of pet training. And then from there, got a real bug for gun dog work. I didn't really like what was going on in the industry, really. So I found out a guy that sort of did more force-free training, force-free trainer, positive reinforcement trainer, and went from there. So that's kind of got me into dogs and gun dog training and pet dog training as well.
Awesome stuff. So were you into kind of the typical gun dog lifestyle prior to getting your lab, or was it your lab that kind of led you into that world?
No, so I'm originally I'm from Birmingham, so I come from a very urban environment. I moved out to Leicestershire, which is where I'm based now, probably about 25 years ago. No, I mean, my parents still say, I can't believe what you do now. So I had no interest in the countryside or anything like that. So, yeah, it's kind of a bit of a swerve ball, really.
To be fair, mate, I think that's awesome, because I think a lot of people do get gun dogs and gun dog breeds and are potentially interested in that type of world and that type of training without necessarily going, the full tweed and shotgun route and going that thing. So I'm going to ask a lot of basic questions, Carl, so forgive me, because it is a world I know little about. So when we talk about gun dogs, what does that mean in your world? What kind of dogs are gun dogs, and what kind of things are involved in gun dog training? I'll let you break that up as much as you want, mate, as you want to answer.
There's basically type of breeds, the retrievers, obvious ones, Labrador retrievers. We've got our flat coat retrievers. We've got a hunter retrievers, so they tend to be the spaniels. And then we've got something called a hunter pointer retriever, an HPR, Vizslas, pointers, Weimaraners. And they're the guys that sort of work the distance. Gun dogs, they've been bred for centuries, basically, to breed the drive into them. Yeah, so they're driven dogs. They don't give up. They want to hunt. They want to get the thing, and they don't give up. And that's kind of where I get a lot of people coming. I've got this dog, Carl. I've got this dog. Okay, what is it? And it's very naughty. It's not naughty, it's driven, yeah? It's what we've bred into them. So that's sort of the three types of gun dogs there are. I've got two Labradors. I've got a Whippet as well. I do work my labs in the field, but they are pet dogs at first and foremost, they're probably on the sofa downstairs as we speak now. So I do work them in the shoot, but to be honest with you, I'm at, so I'm an assessor and an instructor with a thing called the Gun Dog Club. It's a fantastic, it's a charitable trust, actually. It's basically to get people that have got pet gun dogs into the gun dog sport. Even if they're never, ever going to go near a shoot, it's just something nice to do with your dog. You end up with a well-behaved dog. You're bonding with your dog. So just like any dog sport, it's just bonding with your dog. A lot of the time people come just sort of, my dog's got no recall, Carl, what can we do? So I said, right, well, let's just, you know, let's start hunting together as opposed to the dog going off self-employed for 45 minutes or whatever. So they kind of come into gun dog work really without knowing it. We need to give the dogs that outlet for the work. So, you know, we might as well do what they've been bred to do. They'll never have to get dressed up in tweed, never have to go out on a shoot. In fact, with the Gun Dog Club, you don't even have to have a gun dog breed. So that's a really good one. So if you've got a dog that likes retrieving or hunting, give them a go. Yeah.
That's amazing. That's awesome. I think, I mean, I always joke, particularly, and I'm going to pick on the Spaniel owners, but I've had a spate of Spaniels in classes recently, and I always kind of, because they are just, they're an intense breed, and particularly, and I know without going kind of down the rabbit hole of breeding, I know a lot of people get very proud that they've got a dog from working lines and this kind of thing, but they've brought them into a pet household, and these things are just, it's like they're on speed. Like, I've never seen dogs so frantic and just so quick. And like, once they've learned one thing, they're just raring to do something else. And even with my line of work and the type of training I do, like, even I can look at that sometimes and go like, wow, like, what does it take to kind of harness that? And like you say, kind of give them that job and what they're bred to do. So would you mind if I pick your brains a little bit on those kind of three categories then? So
yeah.
Again, retriever, I assume that is the kind of clues in the title. That is very much about going out, getting hold of something and bringing it back.
Yeah. So there's a couple of jobs in the right. So if we pick a shoot, even though we're not going to go on a shoot, but we need to know what the dogs would be bred and what their job would be out in the field. So there's the beating team. So basically there's a gamekeeper. He's paid quite a bit of money to put on a good day for people with guns that have paid quite a bit of money to have a day's, you know, entertainment maybe, or sport. Okay. So he has to rely on a really good team to provide that day for these clients. So he needs a beating team, and they'll work through, usually I joke, but they're in ripped clothes because they're working through the brambles with predominantly hunter retrievers, the spaniels. And they'll be pushing the birds towards the gun line, and then they'll flush them out, and the guys will try and shoot them.
Right.
So they're kind of in the thick stuff. They're pushing the dogs through. And then you've got, I'm going to be generalistic.
It's fine. I appreciate there's a lot of nuance, but it's
you've got
broad strokes work.
You've got the retrievers, spaniels as well, and HPRs. But then you've got a picking up team behind the guns. It's their job, really. Well, first and foremost, it's their job to we deploy them. So we send them out for retrieves if the birds have been wounded or injured. And first and foremost, we get those birds, and it's our job to dispatch them as quickly and as humanely as possible. That's our key job out there.
Yeah.
So we'll send the dogs out for anything that's been wounded. They'll pick them up and come straight back to us. So it's important we teach the dogs straight line retrieving for that kind of thing.
So when you say straight line retrieving, is that literally effectively like an out and back, just head straight to that bird or whatever and pick up the article and bring it as literally as quickly as possible back to the handler?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, most gun dog breeds, if we have an object out, so it doesn't need to be a bird, it could be, we use bags of sand, Greg. Yeah. So 1 pound dummy is generally what we use. So most dogs, when we're training them, they will run out like a bullet to that thing. They might have a sniff of it. They might even pick it up. And generally, they don't really want to bring Ictus back. I always joke that they're the only species on this planet that will go out, pick their dinner up, and then bring it back to another species. So if you look at it like that, it's a big ask, isn't it?
When you put it in that terminology, that's huge. Yeah, I was going to say, that's like sending me to a pizza collection point and asking me to give it to somebody else, let alone that's the same species, let alone a different one. It's that's some dedication and some willingness to do that.
So what we do have to do is we have to train the dogs to want to bring that object back. So, yeah, it's a fast out run, clean pick up, and then fast in run. And that's sort of the main job of the picking up team. And then after the guys have finished shooting, then we can sort of mop up between the beaters and the picking up team. So that's kind of what we do. And then we do need to be able to direct the dogs as well if we need to, if they're sort of in the wrong area. So we have to be able to direct them at distance as well.
I've had the pleasure of seeing you do a little bit of this. So obviously for the listeners' benefit, you and I actually met on a course. And during our breaks during the course, I'd see you get your lab out and head out into the field, launch a dummy, send your dog in one direction, stop them and redirect them into the other to where the dummy was. And I've got to say, mate, watching that at a distance as I'm wrangling two German Shepherds was quite envious. I'm not going to lie, mate. Kind of seeing that level of teamwork that you and your little dog have got was phenomenal. And I think even though not everybody might be after that level of practical application, but in terms of that communication and that trust and that relationship, I haven't met kind of a canine human team that I don't think strive for something similar to that. And I think that's the one thing with gun dog work that always fascinates me, like that level of interaction between handler and dog is absolutely phenomenal.
It's unique, really, because what we're doing, we're working the dogs in highly stimulating environment. So there's a lot going on. They're working with arousal, really. So that's kind of right. I'll let you into secret. So I did lots and lots of training with my second black Labrador, actually the one that you met, Ren. I did lots and lots of training with a fantastic guy, pestered him to go out on a shoot. And I went out on the shoot, and it was the most disappointing day I ever had, because my dog couldn't do anything when we got out there, because all the shooting that was going on, all the birds flying over, all the birds around our legs, the other dogs around, the other people around, it just kind of, it was too much. So she wasn't under stimulus control, basically, if I go a bit geeky on you. Environment was paying out. The environment was paying out more than I could, and she just couldn't do anything for me. So that was a real head scratcher for me, because I knew she could do the exercises back at my field, but out on the shoot, it was just too much. So we sort of had to build up, adding those distractions in, if you like. And that's all we do with the gun dogs. We take a long time getting the basics in there. So sit stays is a big one. Sits with duration, it's a massive one. We teach them a retrieving pattern. Everything's in patterns. Dogs are masters of patterns, so we teach in patterns, and then gradually add our distractions in. And by doing that more and more, you end up with a dog that can operate. We talk about threshold, so the dog can operate under threshold in some quite distracting environments. And that's the kind of interesting part for me. You know, when I'm working, so I had an eight month old black lab today. I just wanted to do some eye contact games with it. The lady had not done any training with this 8 month black lab. And we couldn't even get, it took us 10 minutes to get 6 eye contacts. Okay. So that to me, she came to me for loose lead walking, but actually that to me, there was no connection there. So we worked on that, and it's all about connection, gun dog work, as is most dog training. It's all about your connection and your bond.
Yeah, definitely. I just need to do a quick apology. It is dinner time in my house, so my dogs are starting to get a bit grumpy. So there's some random noises in the background. It's my two telling me that what's going on, why you sat on the laptop, Dad, and not feeding me. So just picking up on that, Carl, because I think that's a really interesting point of those basics. Like you say, that kind of focus, connection, that stationary behavior, sit, stays, impulse control, whatever kind of label you want to put on it. I always find it quite interesting how, particularly with the gun dogs I've ever worked with, and particularly I think the ones that would probably fall in more of that kind of hunter retriever kind of category, I'm going to pick on the Spaniels. Like, that's hard. From my experience, it is. Even as a trainer, I find that incredibly difficult because kind of these dogs controlling that desire to move and go and do stuff and kind of get out in the thicket and all that is really difficult. So how do you kind of find that when you take obviously any person with any dog and obviously potentially gun dog, but what does that kind of journey look like in terms of one where it's done very little work historically and you're trying to get into those focus foundations, those kind of sit, stay, impulsive controls, and then those recall stroke retrieves. Mm. Is it, I suppose, I'm slight tangent here, mate, but my last episode was about kind of time and how people get very obsessed with how long is it going to take me to reach X goal. So I suppose I'm kind of in that mindset with that gun dog work. Kind of what does that look like? Is it a long process? Is it dog to dog specific? Is it a bit like all things, it's as much you put in, the more you get out? Kind of what does that journey look like for a lot of people?
Yeah, so I mean, in the old, right, so in the traditional sort of dog training world, a lot of the trainers would say you haven't really got a gun dog until about at the age of three, because they need to mature as well. The beauty of positive reinforcement training, force-free training, which is what we do, is that we can start with the dogs young. And I mean young, yeah. You can go on the forums out there and say, don't start any serious training until the dog's 6 months of age. But we can start sort of the basics. We keep it fun, but we can start. We can start really young. So to be honest with you, if we were going to train a gun dog the old-fashioned way, if it did something wrong, we'd get after the dog and we'd put an aversive in. Yeah, we put a punisher in.
Yeah.
We can't do that. So we're constantly battling with the environment, and we know the environment pays out huge time. Yeah, it doesn't muck around with a little bit of food. It'll throw a squirrel in, it'll throw a muntjac deer in, a hare in. So it's really pays out big time. So it's almost about gamifying things. So I put a lot of value into gamifying. Well, I've got Labradors, so they'll do anything for a bit of food, but gamifying my food even. So how do I get that food to my dog? So Rem, a black lab, if I throw my food in the air and she can catch that value of that food goes up about tenfold. Play as well. So here's a bit of a thing to say, I play tug with my gun dogs.
Yay.
Yeah. All right.
I'm a huge tug fan anyway, but that is just to kind of dispel a bit of a myth. That is like a taboo thing, isn't it? And is that because of you don't want to promote kind of any kind of ragging type activity with game? Is that kind of where that's cemented in a bit of a myth?
We don't want hard mouthed dogs, so we don't want them chomping on the dummy or the birds or whatever.
Right.
But actually, dogs are clever enough to know, so they're pattern experts. They're clever enough to know whether they're playing with a tuggy toy, a squeaky duck, or whether it is a dummy, which is a work thing, or it's a bird, a real bird. Yeah. What I probably would do is just take my squeaks out of any of my toys, so they're not starting to mouth them. But apart from that, no, I play tug with my dogs, because actually by playing tug, then you've got something that is very reinforcing for when they bring you an item back, we're going to have a game. Yeah. It took me a long time to learn that, did. So I've done a lot of training, and I got involved with couple of ladies, amazing people, Helen Phillips and Jules Morgan. They run the Gun Dog Trainers Academy, and that was kind of an eye-opener for me, what they did with me. I worked with them for a couple of years, and it was just, well, they let me into it. They talk about the four stages of learning, and the first one was unconscious incompetence. You don't know what you don't know. And kind of that was a bit of a learning curve for me. I could see stuff working. I wasn't sure sometimes why it was working, but I wanted to know a bit more. So that's kind of why I got involved with them. And they were just mind blown, really. They kind of changed things for me. There's a few people out there along my journey that I'm incredibly grateful to. And they're two of them. So
I must admit, I've heard nothing but good things in terms of that academy and obviously the two individuals in question. Because I think, am I right in saying that they've been kind of pretty much some of the forerunners in that kind of positive world of Gundog and
yeah,
probably some of the first in a real big organizational sense to really challenge the kind of norms.
Yeah, no, Helen's massive on in clicker training. So, yeah, she was out there. Not trying to age her. Sorry, Helen. But yeah, just an amazing couple of ladies. And just their knowledge is just unbelievable. So that's sort of where we kind of learn to gamify stuff because, you know, Gundog work is just fun. I don't know what it is. When we sort of go and do Gundog work, everybody puts a serious face on it. It becomes sort of, and it's not, it's just another game at the end of the day. That's all it is, the dog. Yeah.
I must admit, we used to have Cavalier King Charles Spaniels and Lucy, our girl of the two, even in her elder age, she loved nothing more. That Spaniel side would really come out if we ever went in the countryside. She was in the hedges, in the bracken, doing that kind of flushingy, hunty type behaviour. And I've never seen her so happy. Her tail would go, we used to call it propeller tail. It wasn't side to side. It was full on circular, kind of crazy wagging, tongue out the side of the mouth, kind of just absolute elation when she kind of got to do that. And I think for me, that's kind of one of the big things. I think when we look at any dog, I do talk to everybody about that. Whatever your dog kind of gets their kicks out of, whether that's from a breeding perspective, whether that's just their personality, how we use and channel that to kind of work with us rather than against us. Because I think that's where I think it does get quite frustrating. And again, picking on, I feel like I'm spaniel bashing. I really don't mean to, but I think it's just because I've had so many recently. But things like lead walking and recall and those impulse control type exercises are always seem to be the, for me, kind of foundational real where we start, but the Spaniels and therefore kind of their parents who seem to really struggle with that a lot. And I assume that is that desire because they are effectively bred to work independently. They're bred to be out there doing something and listening to, you know, the human at the other end of the lead or the field is pretty low down in their kind of priority list. So learning how to get access to both by, you know, a bit of teamwork is, especially when I see Gundog work, is always absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, no, we hunt together. So we hunt together as a pair. That's what teaching the dogs. They don't go off and do their own thing. So a lot of people come to me and they say, I need to improve recall, Carl. Can we do some recall practice? And I say, well, yeah, we can. But let's do a bit of hunting together. Or I don't want to teach my dog to hunt. He's already a brilliant hunter. Well, actually, they're going to do it whatever. So we may as well join in. And then the dog's learning, actually, we hunt as a team. Yeah. Because if you're letting your dog off hunting, you'll find they start going further and further away. And they have gone self-employed on you. And actually, there's very little that we can do once they've got a history of that to get them coming back because they, you know, they've learnt that anything we've got can't really match what they're chasing. Yeah, they're getting massive adrenaline rushes, all the doggy chemical highs in the brain. You know, we're struggling to meet that. So, I do lots and lots of hunting with all my clients, especially with working Cocker Spaniels, Springers, whatever, yeah.
So with that, Carl, again, forgive my ignorance here, but when you say kind of hunting together, what does that look like? Is that kind of dog on a lead or a long line and you're kind of encouraging them to go and do stuff and then try and build your recall off the back of that to send them back out to go hunt again? Or kind of can you, without giving away all your trade secrets, obviously, can you give a little bit of insight into what that looks like?
Yeah, so maybe on long line, but I mean, if we've got a dog on a long line, that then becomes, it's sort of a cue that the dog knows they can't get away. So ideally, what I do is find somewhere where I'm secure. Yeah. And then what I'll do is I'll do a little bit of play with some dummies. So the dogs are starting to find the dummies. They find them reinforcing. They're rewarding. They love the dummies, actually. So I do a little bit of play with those. And then what we'll do is I'll either walk along with the dog, and when they're not looking, I'll drop a little dummy down, just a, I don't know, a little snipe dummy. So they're only, I don't know, 10 centimetres long by 5 centimetres wide, something like that, tiny, tiny little pillows. And if I've got a variety of colours, I might start with some blue ones so they can really see those easily. And then I'll have some red ones as well, because dogs just can't see red. Yeah, they've got to use the nose to, they can almost be on top of them. Yeah. So they've got to use the nose to find those. And I might drop those as I'm walking along, and then I'll just call the dog back and say, hey, what's this? What's this? And it's almost like they're going, flipping heck, I've hunted all over here and I missed that. And it's almost like they're going, I'll stick closer to you next time because you know where all the good stuff is.
Right.
So that's kind of one thing I do. And then another thing is, if I can, I'll go and prep the field. I'll go out to the field and just lob half a dozen little tiny dummies around, and then we'll go and work through the field. We can formalise our hunting, but actually I want the dog to just use their general hunting ability. Yeah. It's kind of, we're working as a team, and I don't want to overhandle the dogs. You see a lot of people overhandle the dogs, and actually, if you trust your dog, they've got that fantastic thing on the end of the face. They'll find the things for us.
Yeah, definitely. That's quite mind blowing, if I'm honest, Carl. So I'm kind of now sat here thinking, well, so that starting principle there is less about, I'm thinking of kind of standard pet dog training here, and kind of we'd build up a reinforcement around a cue, and then we'd start to build the behavior around the cue, and then we'd start to slowly, we'd add control of management, hence why my mind went to a long line, and then start to add distraction in and start to build it up from there. But that approach is brilliant. It really, it's that kind of ability to say, actually, you know, what we're going to do is almost put that distraction out there instantly, but I'm going to set that environment up so it's kind of you leading the dog to it rather than the other way around, which promotes that desire for the dog to work with you. And then I imagine, is that where you would then start to build a recall off the back of that, kind of, because your dog's going to almost expect to come to you thinking that you found it first, and therefore they're going to run to you to get it. Is that kind of the principle there? Am I getting carried away here with my...
Right. So there's a few things going on. So once we're hunting, we don't want the dog. So if it was a live bird, if we're in the beating line and if we're hunting, the dogs flush the birds out. So we don't want them chasing them. So once they've gone, that's our job done. So we don't want them learning to chase. So we might put them on the stop once they've flushed, or stop to shot. So as soon as the birds flush, that's job done. But we build that up very, very slowly. You're probably looking at a couple of years, maybe, before you're doing that. That's the nice thing about the Gun Dog Club, because you go through your graded system. It's a nice way to train, because you're building up to those sort of things. But to start with, no, just keep it fun. And then what we do, once we've got the games, then we can put it under stimulus control on cues. Yeah. And we also do a lot of cue discrimination as well. Does the dog actually understand the cues? So a little game I play with my dogs is the get it game. Yeah, send them out to a bowl with a little bit of food on, but they don't go until you say get it.
Right.
Yeah, and I put, this is one of Jules's actually, I put different words in. So instead of get it, I might say spider, apple, banana, get it, and see if the dog understands that is the cue to run out and get it. So it's just the dog understanding. Do they really understand what we're asking them to do? Because once you're out in that arousing environment, they've got to be absolutely crystal on those cues.
I think this is a bit for me that one of the reasons I absolutely love doing this podcast is because when I speak to somebody like yourself who specializes in an area that I know very little about, this is the bit that for me just kind of helps perpetuate that message about kind of finding the right professional for what it is that you want to do. Because I listen to that, and even I'm excited. I don't even have gun dogs, but I'd be like, that'd be pretty cool. Like, because as the style of training I do, I don't have the need to get to that level, but I can 100% see why that level is attractive, even for me. So you're thinking, yeah, that's kind of a cool thing to kind of for me and my dog to learn. Because let's be honest, we live in a world with social media where there's loads of funky videos out there where there's six dogs in a line and they all respond to their name independently. Or like you say, there might be a temptation in the environment and they kind of have that anticipation to go and get it, but it's not until a certain cue or word is said that they go and get it. And everybody watches those things and everybody gets excited about that. It'd be amazing if, you know, if my Jack Russell, Pug, German Shepherd, Labrador could do that. And I think that's where a lot of us just dive into it. Therefore, I need a dog trainer. And actually, depending on what that level of skill is that you want and the context in which you wish to use it, I think that just helps perpetuate that real desire to specialists exist for a reason. And that for me is exactly it, because I'm sat here slightly gutted that you're in Leicestershire, mate, and you're not close enough for me to come and learn with you, because that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I always say to the guys, so I'll bring out, you've met Rem, a Black Labrador, but I'll bring out Finch as well to classes. So if I'm doing, I don't know, four classes on a Saturday, I'll bring her out. She'll come to puppy class. I'll have her just sat by me for an hour. She might come to beginner gun dog and she'll sit by me for an hour. And people are going, but your dog's trained. My dog's really excited. So they might be over-aroused, the puppies or the beginner gun dogs. They might be, you know, they might be struggling to respond to cues. Okay. And I'm saying, well, actually, Finch, who's sitting here, she's no different to your dog. She is still in arousal, but she's managing to work under that arousal. Yeah, so it's basically where her threshold is. Yeah, she hasn't gone into that reactive part of the brain. If she has, she can still operate up there. Yeah. And the more we do of it, the better they get at that, really. So it's actually a strange thing, because as you get better and better with the work, you put them in the more and more distracting environments, and that's how they kind of learn to manage themselves, really.
And I always find that's really fascinating. Like yourself, I talk a lot to clients about that kind of, I always call it emotion versus thinking, and how in our dog world, it's so different to us, but we're looking at it through our eyes and our brains and everything else, where they're looking at it through theirs. And we're different species. The brains are wired differently. They're different sizes of different parts and all that kind of good stuff. Mm. And I think that's where, for me, I think that's where a lot of that frustration can creep in for a lot of people, because absolutely they can look at a dog like your two, your three. I'm not sure how much dog work your whippet does, but it is that kind of thing. We love to compare and we love to get quite envious when you see the well behaved and the podcast. So me doing air quotes is probably a little bit lost there, but I think that's where it's quite interesting to kind of see how people deal with that and how they overcome it, and having a look at your website and having a look at your Facebook page and stuff, I think that's what's quite nice. Cause I think from what I can see from what you do, it is that kind of staged. It's those little building blocks of gradually making it slightly more complicated and slightly more difficult, so the dog learns to kind of channel those emotions in the right way and still be able to think and still be able to kind of have that level of control, for want of a better description.
Yeah. And every dog's different as well. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's gun dog or whatever, you know yourself. Every dog is different, and it's just about working with the dog in front of you, really. So we just go at their pace. If they're not getting something, I always say there's only two reasons why a dog won't do something. It's either they don't understand what we're after, or the motivation to do it's not there. Yeah. And it's as simple as that. So it's about motivating to want to do it. Keep it short. Yeah. I'm always joking that we used to do double maths at school Wednesday afternoon. I'm 50 odd this year. I still remember it like it was yesterday. So we don't get into double maths territory. We keep all the training short, keep it fun.
I'm very jealous that you've just shared that, Carl, and you've got more hair and you look younger than me. That's slightly envious. Probably a bit of a curveball question here, Carl, but what is the most non-gun dog dog that you've trained to do gun dog work?
Okay, so I've had I've had lots, but there's one that always sticks out for me. And it's not such a weird breed, but it's why the lady did it. So I had a home visit to a lady in her early 70s. She got a cockapoo
Right, yeah.
that was resource guarding. Okay, so I walked into her kitchen and I had a cup of tea with her, and sure enough, this little cockapoo didn't want to give up its, I think it had a little squeaky ball. Yeah, she went and tried to take it off him, and he was saying, "You're not getting this."
Yeah.
Okay. So at that point, I started talking to her about maybe we should start doing some retrieving. Yeah. So the dog's getting to carry stuff, but kind of on our terms. She came and did a couple of one-to-ones with me, and I said, "Come and join beginner gun dog." Now, this lady needed she needed a new knee. Her
Right.
cockapoo was only small, so it actually couldn't carry the dummy. So what she did, she sewed some little bean bags and made that
Oh,
dog. Yeah. And she came out, and she'll be out this summer again. And she's out with some pretty serious gun dogs working with that dog. She has no more resource guarding because dogs get into carry stuff on our terms.
yeah.
And it's just a lovely story that is.
Oh,
And she
wow.
always says to me, "I never would have thought I'd be doing gun dog training in my 70s."
That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's
But no.
sorry, go on, mate. Go on.
Yeah, we do all sorts. So I had a staffie last week. That wasn't so great, but I'm willing to give all of them a go. Yeah. So whatever the breed, never say no.
That's amazing. Do you find that again, your part of the world is not one that I'm overly familiar with, but do you find that you have like a mix? Do you have a lot of kind of Joe blogs, pet dog type people who never thought gun dog would be a thing for them, but have actually started and really kind of got into it a bit like that lady? Or do you tend to have a little bit more of the more hardcore country folk who are that's kind of a bit more within their kind of BAU lifestyle? Or do you have a bit of a muddy mix of all of it?
Right, so yeah, I'd say probably 75% is pets, gun dog,
All right, wow.
because of what we do. So we're I always say to people, we're a bit strange because we're positive reinforcement force-free gun dog trainers. There aren't that many of us about still. There's still not that many that are competing. So in field trial stuff and all the serious stuff, that are starting to win silverware. So really, we need to get out there and start showing people that, and it can be done, yeah, that we can start winning trophies and stuff for it. So sort of the more traditional side, they've kind of trained dogs the same way for hundreds of years. Why would they change it when it works? It just doesn't sit very well with me, some of those practices. So at the end of the day, they're my mates. I don't want to be knocking them around. I want to be learning together. So yeah, that's kind of, I would say 75% is sort of people that want to do something with their dog. They're not sure what. They've maybe had a go at agility, maybe had a go at scent work, hoopers, something like that. And they just were interested in sort of what this gun dog work is. So it's about me really as a positive reinforcement train promoting the gun dog work. And if they want to come out and a shoot, they can always come out and shoot. It's not for everybody. It really isn't.
Yeah, and do you well, I get another question firing in my head there, particularly probably on the grounds of ethics, if I'm honest, Carl, with that, because obviously it is a sensitive subject. Some people will be, quite perturbed that that type of sport still exists and that type of stuff still goes on. So have you ever kind of come across that kind of, I suppose, hesitation from people with pet dogs who would kind of like the skills that gun dog offers, but are very worried that if they start gun dog training, they're going to be forced down this shooting path that obviously they're morally against.
Yeah, I mean they do. Yeah, some people do have their doubts, but to be honest with you, we don't force them. So if they just want to have a 1 pound bag of sand and we do re retrieving with that, absolutely fine. The shooting industry hasn't done itself favors in some instances, but it's all about promoting ethics. I don't shoot myself. I'm still not sure. So someone on these commercial shoots where they shoot vast amounts of birds, I don't know whether that's even sport. You know, you might be able to stick a gun in the sky and just hit something. But from the shoots I go on, it's a very skillful thing. I know that the birds have had a fantastic life. They've had a far better life than any chicken you're going to buy off the supermarket shelves. It's good meat to eat as well. It's healthy meat. So I've got no issues with what I've seen out and about how the birds have been raised and how they've met their end.
I it's one of those topics that can drive such a lot of emotion for lots of reasons. I think, again, even for me, it's I'm a what would I describe myself as? A wannabe vegetarian, I think, might be probably the best description of me, because, again, generationally, it was by it was what I was brought up with. But as I've got older, I've probably got more conflict with it as I've got older. But I've got 37 years of habit of eating meat still in me, so yeah. that's a hard habit to break. But yeah, I think that's a big thing. Whenever I look at gun dogs, kind of the sport aside, the skill and the teamwork that's involved, regardless of, like you say, whether it's with a dummy or whether it's with a bird or whatever else, like, so many of those skills look so transferable to real life in general, yeah. Kind of just pet happy life with your dog, that ability to have that desire to drop something, to leave something and not pick it up, and to recall when kind of called, and to stay with you when there's a whole host of crazy stuff going on in the environment. Mm. That is pretty much every desire from anyone who steps over kind of my door. That's kind of what they're always after. You know, they don't want the dog that's charging over to the football or the squirrel or the other dog in the park. Yeah. They don't want the dog that's going to pick up the random stuff off the pavement. They don't want the dog that's going to run off forever and never come back and their heart's in the mouth for 45 minutes and been there, done that. It's a horrible, horrible feeling. And I think that's where sometimes, I think from certainly the clients I speak to, I think some people can dismiss gun dog training because of the sport without considering the skills involved in the training. And if you find the right trainer who's using the right kind of ethical methods from our perspective, how incredibly powerful that training is to give you all those kind of desirables when you you've got a pet dog in your house.
Yeah. Now, that's how I got into it. I just wanted a well-behaved dog that I could take to the pub. It wasn't going to go and hoover around all the tables. It just stay with me. And if I wanted to go to the bar without taking the dog, it'd sit and stay. And then, I don't know, 15 or so years later, this is where it's got me.
I've got to ask, do you do any of this kind of stuff with your whippet?
She has been known, so I've got some hay bales down at my fields. We throw a dummy at the end of the hay bales and they run. You can see it at the country fairs, actually. They run and they jump the hay bales. So she's pretty flipping quick. In fact, they don't really like you doing it with a whippet because it's looked upon as cheating because they're so fast. But yeah, she's good. She's all right. She's learned from, I think she thinks she's probably Labrador anyway because she lives with two Labradors. So she just thinks she's a skinny Labrador.
What's the name they give for that? A friend of mine does it. I can't think of, is there a name they give for it where they do that?
The hay bear, the scurries.
Scurries, that's it. That's the one.
Yeah.
Again, similar, probably like a lot of Joe Public. When you go to country shows or if you go to dog shows, there's usually some kind of gun dog type demonstration. And I like to say, to see them work, and it always fascinates me because I think a lot of people can sometimes, even though I've said desirable, that a lot of those skills are transferable. I think a lot of people don't realize just how transferable it is to go down a gun dog in inverted quotes kind of route. But actually, those skills are pretty much universal life skills that most dog trainers want to train you. Mm. And because of how important they are in the gun dog world, I'd probably say it's kind of a better route because you're almost are just focusing on one or two, three, four very specific set of skills and working them to a point of, you know, incredible mastery to be able to do that type of sport, regardless of whether you do the sport or not.
Yeah. Now, here's a bold statement. So I've thought about this for quite a long time now. So just like yourself, you get people come and it's usually loose lead walking, recall. You know, you could make a living off probably those two things. And I thought for a long time, we don't actually have any recall problems with gun dogs. They don't. In fact, here's a statement. I'm trying to think the last time I recalled one of my Labradors. I don't really think I have, for at least probably this week. Okay, we're only on, I don't know, what we're on, Tuesday. But since last Thursday, maybe, I haven't recalled one of my Labradors because they don't go that far. They're kind of, they're always with me because all the good stuff's coming from me. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I love that. I call it kind of orbiters when I talk about people in class. I was like, most people don't want, yes, recall is nice. And it's a thing that I think as humans we're conditioned to kind of want with our dogs. But I was like, I usually don't want my dog to go that far in the first place. It's like, if I'm worried that my dog is 100, 200, 300 yards away from me, that in itself is probably the bigger issue than whether they come back from that distance. I kind of, I want my dog to be off lead and in stretch of legs and do the things, you know, the doggy things that they want to do. But I kind of do want them in sight. I kind of want to know where they are. I don't want that heart in mouth moment of, bloody hell, I've not seen them for 5 minutes and they disappeared in that woodland and where the hell have they gone? And and I think that's quite a very interesting mindset, isn't it, of promoting that connection where your dog is with you regardless of whether there's a lead involved or not, versus how far you can get away before you have to recall. I think that's quite a cultural shift, isn't it, to go from that. I know recent clients I've worked with, they get very, apologies again if you can hear my dog in the background here, I'm going to whinge on that he's not had his tea yet. But yeah, kind of get very obsessive about distance with recall and very like, you know, kind of how far can they go and how many things can I throw at them and still get them to recall back. And yeah, similar to yourself, I'm kind of the other mindset of, well, I kind of don't want my dog that far away from me because I kind of still want, you know, I go for a dog walk to be with my dog. Yeah. So, you know, having them 20, 30, 40 feet around me is absolutely kind of what I want as opposed to 400 feet away from me.
Yeah. No, another one of my favourite dog trainers, Jane Arden. She said something a few weeks ago. Every time a dog looks at her, doesn't matter where it is, running around the field, if it checks in with her, she just marks it and it happened again. I just thought, oh, how simple is that? But it's genius.
It's big Jane fan. She's a phenomenal trailer. Her book's brilliant. And her book was probably my first real delve into that kind of Gundog-esque type world. And I was, I was quite surprised with how many of those kind of exercises I kind of did and taught in class and did my own dogs, never quite realizing that transferable skill to the Gundog world. And how with a gun dog mindset you can advance those skills kind of so well. And I think that's why for me it is, I think, and it might, this might just be the part of the country I'm in, but I think there is that very, you're either a gun doggy person or you're not in terms of the kind of the other stuff that goes with the countryside living side of it. And I think that's where for me there's that real desire really to kind of just help people realize actually having someone who is proficient in gun dog training in an ethical, you know, reinforcement sense is a brilliant asset to your kind of training. If you can get hold of it and you've got somebody of that caliber in your area, I dare say you'd do a better job than I would. Absolutely. In terms of training some of those real core skills.
No, it's still sort of in, it's not in its infancy, but it's about people coming and having a go and not feeling, oh, I shouldn't be, you know, come and have a go at it. It's well, I got the bug, something terrible.
I can absolutely say watching you work, mate, it was a pleasure, and it definitely got me the bug of being very intrigued, hence why I want to talk to you again. Carl, thank you so much, mate. I know you've already spent a good chunk of your evening coming to talk to us on the Woofing Pawson podcast. But before I leave, I think perfect segue is, where can people find you? Where can kind of people come and find out more about your company, your training? Kind of plug away, mate, plug away.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me anyway. It's Charnwood Dog School. You can find me on Facebook, Charnwood Dog School. www.charnwooddogschool.co.uk. I'm also, you can find me on the Gun Dog Club. I'm probably their newest instructor and assessor. So you'll find me there. IMDT, IMDT accredited. So I'm on their pages as well. But yeah, that's me. I'm in a beautiful part of the Charnwood Forest in Leicestershire, about 5 minutes off Junction 23 of the M1. So yeah.
That look at that. It's I will of course steal your links and put them in the show notes, mate, so people can find you. But Carl, before I kind of close out, is there anything else that you want to share about the wonderful world of gun dogs or what you do? Now's your chance, yeah. Mate.
No, I don't think so. No, it's been lovely speaking to you about it. It's just nice to promote what we're doing, really. So thanks for having us on.
No, definitely, mate. Thank you so much for sparing the time. And it's been a pleasure. And no doubt I'll get you on again, mate, because I've probably got loads more questions, but I'm very grateful for the time you spared already, so I won't take it all tonight. But thank you so much for joining me.
All right. Cheers, Greg.
Take care, Carl. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening to the Woofin Pawsome podcast. As always, if you do want to get in touch, you can find us on social media. I'm at Great Paws NE, which is Great Paws NE for Northeast, on both Facebook and Instagram. You can also contact me via my website, which is greatpaws.co.uk. And you can also consume some free online courses at greatpawsgang.co.uk. Excellent. Thank you very much, folks, and we will see you soon for our next episode.